Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
We're very lucky to have State Senator Tony Wong. He's with us here this morning. And we want to talk a little bit about the guidelines, Senator, for businesses set to reopen on May 20th. Do you feel that in order to reopen, the Connecticut team handled the protocols the way they should?
Well, these are very difficult times, and you're never, ever going to make everybody happy. And with relations to the restaurants, there has been a real concern as to the outdoor dining availability, but then not indoors. And they are just pent up, and you hear so much about how restaurants are devastated. The outdoor dining is a solution. Is it the end-all solution for all the challenges our restaurants are enduring? I don't think so. But nevertheless, the solutions that the governor provided for the reopening committee has been under a lot of question.
Well, I thought it was interesting, Senator, because I was reading the Connecticut Post over the weekend, and the Connecticut Restaurant Association was quoted in it and was talking exactly what you were saying about the indoor versus outdoor. And it says here, malls and hair salons and others who are allowed to gradually start their indoor services. But how is it illogical that restaurants can't do that? Because when you think about it, they're staying in place the whole time. Once you're seated at your table, you're confined within your table. But if you're in a store, you may bump into more people. Really, what is the difference? If anything, does it sound like it's safer to sit indoors of a restaurant?
Well, you know, Scott Dolick, who's the Connecticut President Restaurant Association, does a fantastic job advocating, and particularly restaurants as a whole is a major part of our industry in the state of Connecticut. So his points are very well taken in regards to the 50% capacity at stores and et cetera. But restaurants are a little different in the sense that you're looking at an experience, right? That people are looking to engage and have a relaxed setting. And I think that's one of the greater challenges that they have, not only from the standpoint of being able to open, but there's a real challenge is the consumer going to come and participate? Mm-hmm. And that's the real question. That's where the sense of urgency, perhaps, for our restaurants to try to get a sense of where everything is going with this. There's a real concern as to whether consumers are going back and looking for the normal dining experience. And if you look at the other aspects of the complexities and the challenges of what we're placing on these restaurants, you know, flatware needs to be packaged and rolled into napkins, and they're now going to have to find masks, which are a short supply, and they have to provide hand sanitizers, and they have to regularly clean to a higher level. These are all costs associated with labor and people that need to do all of this work. So for a lot of our restaurants, the small mom and pop, that may be a cost too great to bear. And then they may be forced to open because of rent and costs that are associated with operating a restaurant before they possibly go out of business. But at the same time, they may find they may not have the business volume in order to keep up with all the challenges and the costs that they have. It really is a model for every one of our businesses, retail businesses, salons and barbershops. You know, maybe there's just not enough business right now because of the uncertainty. Unless we get better testing, unless we get a better sense of this disease in regards to its consequences and its cause and its implications, you're really kind of in the dark in regards to these kind of openings. So whatever the governor does, whatever the reopening committee happens to occur, you're going to make somebody unhappy. But ultimately, it's a delicate balance between whether the consumer is going to come back and whether it's going to be a brand new normal that everybody has to adapt to. So with restaurants, it's going to be a constant fight. But at the same time, so is every other industry. Offices, retail, salons, and all other aspects of what we have. The governor at 11 o'clock is going to talk about reopening schools. these are unprecedented times. And I think back to almost 2 months ago, Melissa, when we talked about the possibility of a brand new normal. I never realized it was so proficient and prescient.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're talking with State Senator Tony Wong. But, you know, in regards to restaurants, in regards to the whole thing, I think this is kind of like, let's see how it goes and we'll tweak it as the weeks go on. The thing that I picture in my mind when you go to a restaurant now, because the governor said it several times, keep the conversation to a minimum. It's going to be real quiet in there. I'm going to get like a feeling of like paranoia. Can I talk? Can I open my mouth? When can I take off my mask to put the fork into my mouth? There's like a whole thing going on here now. I mean, am I the only one thinking like that?
Absolutely not. I mean, part of the dining experience is the socialization, the intimacy, the engagement, and you know, the bars will not be open. Even the bars at the restaurants won't be open. It really is something that we're pressed to get into business and reopen up and begin a phase in for some degree of a new normal. But we have to be very cautious. And one of the challenges is the governor in an interview later on the week said, you know, we may consider indoor dining with large windows. Well, you know, these kind of variables are really what causes confusion for our businesses, because they don't want to break the law, but they really want to be able to do business. So I would urge stronger guidance, stronger and more clarity from the governor in regards to this. But ultimately, it is a uncertain world that we're going into for these restaurants. My heart goes out to them because there are many businesses that have put their life into it, and it's really part of who they are. And to see it possibly all go up in smoke is really heart-wrenching. But you know, I think we're going to persevere, but at the same time, we're going to have to be challenged with what we have to do. You know, the outdoor dining problem, we also have to think about, for restaurants that want to be able to establish outdoor dining, you're going to have to go through local zoning and planning to get approval to get outdoor seating. It really isn't that easy.
No, it really isn't. And things like buffets, salad bars, they all go out the window, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, they're gone.
Absolutely. And we're making these costs. Can you imagine trying to get sanitizers and make it available in the open?
Sure.
Right? You got to get masks. What struck me the most unusual was the fact that you're going to have to wear a mask going into a restaurant and only take it down to eat and put it back up. It defeats the whole atmosphere.
Right.
And that's the real challenge, right? Mm-hmm. Is, are the consumers going to come back?
No, I mean, here's the thing is Senator, no. There are already polls out there that even before the guidelines came out, that it was like 7 out of 10 people are not comfortable going back to a restaurant in the near future. I bet you with the guidelines out, it's probably going to be more like 9 out of 10 people. What is the point? If there are so many rules, just do curbside and free-for-all at your house. That's how I look at it, you know?
But the pressure is, and this is one of the pitfalls I want to share, is for these restaurants that are ready and need to get open and thinks there's a pent-up demand for business, they spend all of that money and cost to get it up and running, and the customers don't come.
That's
a problem. Oh, my gracious.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They're getting a double whammy of cost burdens that they never expected. So you're right. I mean, are we rushing in with so much uncertainty just for the sake of opening? Perhaps. And maybe we should differentiate between the large franchise businesses that have the capacity and the economy scale versus our mom-and-pop shops that have been supported so well by initiatives by our community, that curbside may be the way to go until we get a higher degree of certainty. Because if the consumer doesn't come back, who are you hurting the most? Mm-hmm. It's the owners and the restaurants that have put their money and soul into a business that they love, and unfortunately, they're just really struggling right now.
Senator, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes, and hopefully we'll talk to you next Monday.
Absolutely. Thank you always.
We are joined this morning by Greg Dancho from the Beardsley Zoo. Greg, how are you this morning? It's good to have you, as always.
Good morning, Tony. Good morning. Good morning. How are you today?
We're doing okay. You know, we're reading here the new guidelines came out on Friday. How do you feel about the ones pertaining to the zoo?
Yeah, we've gone through those guidelines. We have actually looking at when we do get the green light to do a, I guess we call it a soft opening or a reopening. We are looking at trying to at least meet, well, we're going to meet those guidelines and exceed those guidelines. So we're right now having staff meetings that are going on and going through the facility, looking at how we're going to get guests in and how we're going to get them through the Zoom safely and still give them a good guest experience. So we still have some questions to answer, but we're working really toward that with signage, with people in the zoo giving information. And again, the whole idea here is to keep our guests, our staff, and our animals safe.
Yeah, and I know, Greg, the last time we had you on, you had mentioned some of the things that you wanted to do. And actually, it's right in line with what the guidelines were, which is incredible. Just a question, because we actually had a couple of people reach out over the weekend. You guys are very popular, obviously, for Mother's Day, and people couldn't go. So the question was about your cap. Do you guys have any idea at this point? Are you doing like a parking cap? Is it going to be where you have to buy your tickets online? And if you're sold out, if you check online, that's how you know the cap has been reached. Any idea on how you guys are handling that?
First, happy Mother's Day, Melissa.
Oh, thank you.
Secondly,
yeah, we missed coming there yesterday.
We are going to be looking at a capacity of the zoo, the number, a capacity right now, and again, this shifts every day, is about 500 people capacity at the zoo. We are going to be doing time ticketing and ticketing online. We're going to get that information out to everybody on our website and again, Facebook page. How that's going to work. We can't open the zoo gates and let everybody in. We are been told that we have to have a 50% capacity level at the facility. And again, this again going back to making sure everybody's safe. And we're going to do that through year. You're going to buy your tickets online, and online they'll know whether or not we've sold out for that time period. At the juncture right now, we're looking at making sure everything stays again, safe and clean for people coming through. So our staff is looking now at where and how we're going to be maintaining stations to clean throughout the zoo.
Greg, you know, you talk about 50% capacity. Okay, which means what? How many people would you allow into the zoo at one time?
Right now, our working number right now is about 500 people
at one time.
500 people in the zoo at one time, right? So we're looking at a capacity of 500 people in the facility. And again, we're looking at the logistics of how we would then have other people be able to get in and get out. Again, if we're doing this without buying tickets at the gate, we have to have a method to where we know people are leaving and other people can buy tickets to come in. So again, those are the type of things we're working on right now that are still a little bit hazy. The system that we're putting in needs to be looked at and tested, so we make sure that everybody can get a good experience coming to the facility.
It sounds like it's going to be a little on the intricate side at first.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because, again, something we've not done before. We are relying on other facilities that have done this. We're talking to them and getting their best practices in. And again, we've got a short time period to get this done. We will, again, do our best to look at that May 20th. And again, May 20th is still a open number. So at this point, we're not really, we're going to do as best we can to for everybody's safety.
And we're talking to Greg Dancho with the Beardsley Zoo in Bridgeport. So some exciting news over the weekend was that you guys have a new furry friend with you guys. It's the new red wolf named Flower Moon. And before we talk about this little guy, I wanted to know, just with the pandemic going on, because the Beardsley Zoo is so known for bringing in, rescuing, and obviously being able to help some of these habitats, which you're going to talk about the red wolves. But how difficult has it been for you guys to get animals in during this time?
Well, we've actually put a moratorium on it through the last couple months. We've not moved animals, and then there's two reasons for that. One is that getting animals in and out takes some time and some logistics, and the airlines weren't moving animals at that time, so we really couldn't do anything at that point. But we wanted to make sure that we weren't going to bring animals in that could be taxed, stressed being coming into the situation where we had areas that we need to put them in. And for our staff, too. I mean, we didn't want to really add more animals and new animals to the staff while we're, again, going through this through this pandemic. So we put a pretty much on our own. We put a hiatus on bringing animals in. However, Kiwani had actually come in before this occurred, so she was already in our system, quarantine system, when she came in. Every animal that comes into the zoo has to go through at least a 30-day quarantine period to make sure that if they're bringing anything in, we can catch it before it goes up in the collection. Again, we talked about that before. Health and welfare of our animals is paramount. So animals do come in. They go into our animal care center and will be tested for 30 days to make sure they're not carrying anything that can be transmitted to our animals here at the zoo. So she was actually here before that.
Yeah. And Greg, I know we're running out of time, but can you tell us really quickly about Flower Moon?
Yeah, Kiwani is the Cherokee name for Flower Moon. Flower Moon is a Mexican red wolf, one of the most endangered species of wolves on the planet. We're extinct in the wild and have now been brought back through work with zoos and fish and wildlife. We've been very proud that we've actually had animals. We've had pups that were born here at the zoo, released back to the wild. She did come, she was born in Tacoma. Tacoma was the place where all the red wolves really started there. That's where the SSP really started in Tacoma. And she went to Miller Park and then on to us. She's been paired up with our male red wolf, Peanut. Peanut came to us from the wolf sanctuary up in Salem, New York. And right now, they've been put together right about the end of the breeding season. So we are not really thinking they're going to have pups this year. But again, they've been put together because of the SSP program. SSP is one of the most important programs we have here to help with endangered species, to help them keep them on our planet. And right now with red wolves, because of the work that's been done to get them back in the wild, that's kind of flagged off because of legislative issues. Those animals now in the wild are becoming more and more endangered again. They were actually extinct in the wild, and we brought them back. Now we're working to, again, restore that population. So putting our Kiwani and Peanut together is really paramount to keeping the species alive on our planet.
Geez, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, you know, with the pandemic, you've got to worry about your employees. You've got to worry about the public coming in and keeping them safe. And you've also got to worry about all of these animals, keeping them safe as well. I mean, you guys are working 25 hours a day.
Yeah, it's a stressful time. But again, this is something that this is our vocation. And we love doing this. And again, it is part of, again, being an AZ accredited facility. Conservation, education, guest experience, and research is what we do. And we've been doing it for many years. And again, it's something that we love doing.
All right. Greg Dantio, Beardsley Zoo. If people want more information, where do they go?
Again, go to our website, beardsleyzoo.org, or to our Connecticut Beardsley Zoo on our Facebook page.
All right. Sounds good. Greg, thank you so much for doing this. And we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, guys. Stay safe.